Welcome to the Sunbird Sports Show with Paul Metters. Brought to you by Fresno Pacific University on 790 ESPN.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here a little bit earlier than normal. We normally have a slot between 6 and 7, but we moved it up an hour from 5 to 6. We got a high school basketball game on 1430 ESPN starting at 6:45-ish at Samaki Memorial, Bakersfield. So tune into that right after this show, of course. But thank you guys for adjusting. You also can listen to this show as a podcast on Spotify, on Apple, on YouTube as well. It's being streamed live on YouTube. Just go and search for ESPN Fresno and boom, there you go. Live video matched with the audio as well. So we love it when you guys go back and listen to past episodes. This is year number two, and we're going to keep this rolling till the end of the year. I always enjoy talking with the wonderful student athletes at Fresno Pacific University, Division II school. Love talking with the coaches as well. Well, tonight is going to be a special edition of the Sunbird Sports Show. If you guys remember last year on December 4th, I looked this up, we had Jaime Ramirez on the show, exclusively talked with Jaime. And if you are familiar with soccer in Fresno and in California and even beyond, you are certainly familiar with the name Jaime Ramirez. The field at Fresno Pacific University is named after him, the soccer field, of course. He is an absolute legend. When I was there as a student, he was a coach there and just has done an amazing job with both the men's and women's program. Currently, his position is the title of Director of Soccer at Fresno Pacific University. How about this? In 32 seasons, he's coached the Sunbird men to a 350-win and 41-ties record. What a phenomenal career. He graduated from the school in 1981. As a player, he scored 54 goals, 27 assists, 134 points. I don't want to short him any points. That was a record that stood until 1999. He started the women's soccer team in 98, was the program's first head coach. First head coach at the Fresno Fuego as well from 2003 to 2007. He's a part of tons of Hall of Fames. I think three of them. He was an absolute pleasure to talk to on December 4th of last year. I encourage you guys, go back and listen to that because we talk a lot about his childhood, coming to Clovis High School to live, coming to Clovis Unified as a youngster, living with his grandparents, didn't know any English, credited a few teachers with really just pouring themselves into his life, played soccer at Clovis High. Again, I mentioned his career totals as a player at Fresno Pacific University, played some pro soccer as well. So that was a great episode. And one of the reasons why we brought him back is because we ran out of time. That episode definitely needed to be extended, and we are going to extend that tonight, hearing the rest of Jaime Ramirez's career. We're going to give a little recap with him, right? He has an incredible story to tell. We hear about his pro career, what he did at Fresno Pacific University as far as soccer. We also have a couple fun questions as well that I'm excited to hear Jaime answer as well. All right, so before we take a break and bring on Coach Ramirez, he'll always be Coach Ramirez to me, even though he's like, Paul, you got to call me Jaime. All right, call him Jaime, Coach Ramirez. Anyway, excited to hear from him. But always with the Sunbird Sports Show, we give a little recap of the events from the last week. There were a couple major tests for the Sunbirds athletics. Both basketball programs saw some early season action on the road. The women lost 73-61 to UC Merced on Friday and 71-54 against Chico State on Saturday. The men lost 75-71 in a close one to Cal State East Bay on Friday and 65-60 to Stanislaus State on Saturday. Thursday, speaking of soccer, the men's soccer played against number 16 Point Loma in the PacWest Soccer Championship semifinals hosted by Westmont. Sean Williamson headed in a corner from Chris Macias in the 15th minute to score a solid goal for the Sunbirds, but ultimately they would fall to the eventual champion 4-1, wrapping up a strong fourth place finish on the season. Friday, men's water polo traveled to Biola and triumphed 11-6 over the Eagles. Christian Clark, he's a senior. He led the way for the Sunbirds with 4 goals in the WWPA contest. On Saturday, they played Concordia Irvine in a hard-fought 14-7 loss. But Sanger's Chase Hammes, 16 saves combined on the weekend, earned him both the WWPA Defender of the Week and Raising Cane's Sunbird of the Week. How about that volleyball team? Well, they had a wild weekend in SoCal. Friday, they played at Biola, taking care of the Eagles 3-1. Then they continued south to San Diego, where on Saturday they faced number 2 Point Loma in a 5-set thriller, ultimately falling 3-2 to the Sea Lions. Despite the very close loss, the Sunbirds women finished as PacWest regular season co-champs and are still ranked 10th in the nation. That was their first loss on the season. From Redwood High, Devin Castaneda, she had 46 digs across the two matches, earning herself PacWest Defender of the Week and Raising Cane's Sunbird of the Week honors. Well, volleyball, they're continuing their season, obviously. They have high hopes for the Division II playoffs. They're in Honolulu, Hawaii right now for the PacWest tournament. They're going to be facing Chaminade tomorrow at 9:30 Pacific Standard Time for a berth in Friday's championship match. Meanwhile, men's water polo is off to Geneva, Ohio for the WWPA Championships, tipping off on Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time against McKendree. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to bring on Jaime Ramirez, the much-regarded Director of Soccer at Fresno Pacific University. You're listening to All on the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.
Now, welcome back to the Sunbird Sports Show with Paul Metters on 790 ESPN.
All right, this is the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN. An hour early, more than normal, and Jaime Ramirez is here, and we were just talking about how we're, even though it happens every year of our lives, we're just still not used to this time change. It's, what, 5:16 right now, and it's still dark outside.
Yeah, it's amazing. It you can never get used to it.
You can't.
Know, love the long days, and all of a sudden, we got the long nights.
I know, absolutely, yeah. And seems like I don't get more sleep as it goes. You think you'd be tired earlier, yeah. But I'm still getting to sleep like at midnight every night. So I mentioned, Jaime, that it was around this time last year, December 4th, to be exact, that you came on the show, and we ran out of time, right? We just, we're hearing about your life and your wonderful soccer career, and we just didn't have enough time, and we're like, I think you even said at the end of the show, that's it, we're out of time already, we still got more to talk about. Well, it's about a year later, so we're going to be continuing our great conversation, and man, it's always great when I get to see you and talk to you. You're such an ambassador for the game of soccer, and you love Fresno Pacific University, and that shines through and through, and thanks for showing up again, even though it's dark outside, right? Thanks for showing up again and ready to talk some soccer in your career.
Thanks for having me, Paul. I really appreciate the opportunity to share. And anyone that's listening out there, you know, welcome to the show. And and hopefully what we are about to share, you know, can be helpful to whatever it is that you do in life particularly, you know. And, you know, for me, through the sport of soccer and some amazing people that have helped me, you know, get to where I am.
I got to talk about that cool jacket that you got. It's the first thing I noticed, man. You're an ambassador for Adidas as well. You got a rep that you've been close to all these years. But where do I? Is that a one of one? I can't even purchase something like that, right? Look at that. It's green Adidas with the Fresno Pacific emblem on it. That's a sharp looking piece of material you got there.
Yeah, it's the army look representing, yeah. You know. And yes, I do have a wonderful relationship with my good friend and compadre, Faramaz at Soccer Express. A shout out, you know, to him. He's been amazing, you know, to me and my family and my program at the university since the early 90s when he got involved in retail of soccer products. And so, you know, my wife and I are godparents to his only daughter. Shout out to his wife, Gita, as well. And Miros is our goddaughter's name. And so we've had an amazing relationship, you know, Faramaz and I.
So there's no way I could get something like that, like that jacket.
Oh, we can hook it up, man.
Oh, there
we can,
you go.
We can talk to the sponsors. Yeah.
All right. I like that. All right. So we're going to talk about your pro career and what soccer is like right now, the landscape of it, and about Fresno Pacific University. But let's go back and maybe give like a 5 minute recap or version of you growing up. So born in Mexicali, came to the United States to live with your grandparents when you were just a young boy, right? And
yes.
Just kind of take it from there and some of the things that you learned playing at Clovis High and then Fresno Pacific. And then we'll talk about your pro career and what that looked like.
Yeah, I mean, I came to live with my grandparents in 1968 when I was 11 years old. Got to do all of the elementary school kinds of things. You know, first, obviously, culture shock, not knowing the language and going to a school. There was a K-8 school and they had their sports and... In fact, I was mentioning to someone the other day that that year, since my beginnings of soccer in Mexico and somewhat organized sports, that year, 68, 69, was the only year that I did not play any sports because I didn't know the American sports. I didn't know football, flag football, baseball, basketball, you know, all the other track, all those kinds of things. I was pretty much just laying low. And then my second year, I did everything. Everything I could. I needed to do something, and tackle football was the first experience, and loved it, enjoyed it. We at Temperance Cutner Elementary School, we won everything. In all of the six whatever sports we played, we only lost one contest, a basketball game against Jefferson Elementary School. But Temperance Cutner 1968-69 was the bomb. And so a shout out to all my buddies out there from TK. But yeah, so I played and then I didn't get to play soccer until I got to high school, and I was really eager to try out for the team 4 years later after my arrival. The fortunate thing was that I was able to play other sports and kept one of the observations I make is that tackle football and basketball helped me with my soccer skills. I had the soccer skills, but the contact sports, once I got to high school, a freshman, and tried out for the varsity team with juniors and seniors, they were much taller and stronger and in some ways maybe faster than me, but didn't have the skills that I had. Really, the football, I believe, was the one that helped me out a lot in terms of understanding contact and then contact without pads, right? And so... I played and had a wonderful time at Clovis High. Met a wonderful man who just got inducted. Not inducted, I'm sorry. He received, I believe it was a Harold Zinkin Award at Fresno County Athletics Hall of Fame, Carl DeWasian. A shout out to Carl out there. He's an amazing man in my life. As far as my soccer coaching education in the early years, even when I was in high school, he came and switched positions for me in high school. Advised my coach to take me out of the forward line and bring me back to the midfield because of my skills. So I'd be able to see the ball a lot more, and really was instrumental in changing the way I played the position and how much I saw the ball that continue to hone my skills. But shout out to Carl DeWasian.
Carl saw that.
And then after that, you know, my opportunity through a Sunday League experience to be recruited a year after I graduated from high school by Ben Norton, then soccer coach at Fresno Pacific College, and he offered me an opportunity to play at Fresno Pacific. I took it and had four amazing years. I met up with one of my teammates at one of our games in Southern California this year. He came and watched us, two of them, in fact, George Moya and Tim Townley, who played with me, and we were reminiscing and how truly miraculous a small school like Fresno Pacific and what Ben Norton did with us, a group of 15 to 19 players, we were able to accomplish big, big things at Fresno Pacific College and really take on the role of David versus Goliath and beat some significant opponents in the country and play some of the top teams like University of San Francisco, NCAA Division I champions, beating Fresno State once, but accomplishing something that nobody thought was possible. beating Seattle Pacific and NCAA Division II national champions, winning our very first regional title, you know, and out of those experiences, having an opportunity to play professional soccer in Los Angeles with the Los Angeles Aztecs was icing on the cake, you know, for me. And even though it was only 1 year in the reserves, before most of the North American Soccer League franchises folded, I had the opportunity to do that, and that was a blessing in my life. And it allowed me to come back and teach some of that to the players at Fresno Pacific College once I became an assistant coach.
Was that a goal for you to try out for a pro spot like in college, or when did that become a reality for you?
Well, it was always a dream. It was a dream since I might have mentioned it in the last interview a year ago, that in 1966, while in Mexicali, I was watching the World Cup that was being played in England. I watched it in black and white. I knew about Pelé. I hadn't seen him play until that tournament. And watching England win the World Cup against Germany, et cetera. At that moment, as a 9-year-old kid, I'm thinking, oh, I want to be a pro. Why not? And so my time outside of chores at home and working over the summers and, you know, selling newspapers, shining shoes, whatever our mother had us do, going to school, outside of that was soccer in the streets, with the idea that, you know, that someday I may get an opportunity, you know, and coming here to the U.S., and yeah, a different culture when it came to soccer here in the U.S. By the time I was in high school, I knew about the North American Soccer League. I knew about Pelé coming to the U.S. I knew about a lot of the European players: Johan Cruyff, George Best, Carlos Alberto, Franz Beckenbauer. You know, the great players of our time in the 70s were all coming to the U.S. and play. And I did. I had an opportunity to get to see them in L.A. I went to see them as a high schooler. I went to San Jose to see George Best play with the Earthquakes. And so then the dream was closer. It was a little more palpable to be able to see those heroes of mine play live. And then while in college, do as well as I did, to be given a phone call to my coach to say, hey, we want to look at Ramirez.
Did you try to emulate your game after any one of those guys that you mentioned, or you just try to pick, like, hey, you know, I want the striking ability of this guy, I want the speed of this guy, I want the intensity of this? Is that kind of how you looked up to those guys?
Two players specifically. Pelé, in the early 70s, there was a movie reel that came out, called Pelé, the Master and His Methods. In fact, I still have the movie reel. And it showed, you know, he broke down how to strike the ball with the outside of your foot. His Puma boots were sewn with leather in the different color leather in the areas where he would strike the ball, the outside of the foot, the instep, the area right by your arch where you make a push pass. And then he would show you how to strike the ball. He would show you how to bend it, that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're just going outside and practicing. I mean, it's easy to say for hours. I don't know how many minutes I went outside and trained.
Until it was dark.
Yeah, exactly. Until it was dark, exactly. Until the legs hurt. Yeah. That I can tell you. Until the legs hurt. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of times striking the ball. Then a Brazilian player that also played with Pelé in the 1970 World Cup, Rivelino. He was a lefty, and he hit the ball with the outside of his left foot brilliantly. And I wanted to be ambidextrous, you know, be able to hit the ball with my right and my left foot. And I practiced the outside of my left foot, even though I was right foot dominant, and learned to hit it really well, really well. And so those two gentlemen, Brazilian players, were the ones that I think I emulated my ability to strike the ball. And obviously Pelé was a wizard with ball on his feet. I learned about Johan Cruyff, you know, the Dutchman that was fantastic in his movement and his ability to dribble and score goals, but nothing like Pelé in terms of striking the ball like Pelé and Rivelino. Those were the two guys that I pattern my game after.
Obviously, you're talking about growing up in the 60s and 70s, and it's nothing like today where, heck, I could go to my phone, you could go to the computer, you look up anybody on YouTube and find clips. Everything is instant. Back then, how did you get your information? You mentioned you still got that reel from Pelé, but did you soak up any newspapers or anything that you could find on TV? How did you find out about these?
There were games on weekends, one game a weekend that was transmitted from Mexico. I remember on Sundays watching the game, and it would normally would be Copa America from Mexico City or the team that I became a fan of, Cruz Azul. And they had players that they could do that. They could hit the ball well. I would watch them, and I don't recall if they showed some of the replays in slow motion kind of thing. But I do recall watching those games. And there were magazines that were being sent, the soccer magazine specifically, were being sent from Mexico to Chinatown here in Fresno, where my parents would take me, and I would buy the soccer magazines. And every once in a while, they would have a page where they would have a little square demonstrating this is how you would strike a bending ball, more of a diagram, a caricature kind of a thing. And I said, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. And so just practicing in my backyard and striking the ball against a tree, against the wall, whatever, just to see if I could give it the effect. You know, I mean, in some circles, they say, you know, I'm giving it English, right? I'm just giving it a bend. Yeah. You know, the Europeans, you know, say that. And so so I did that. And it was limited, but we didn't have as many distractions. So let's just say that, okay, like these days. You mentioned the social media and all those kinds of things. We have amazing resources right now for children that we can put out there to them. But it really comes down to the individual to go out there
how bad they want it.
And spend the hours upon hours upon hours striking the ball, playing small-sided games. Outside of the club, outside of the team, outside of the school, outside of all those settings, you know, and you're younger than me, but I come from a generation where, you know, we were playing pickup games. We were playing 3-on-3, 1-on-1, 2v2 on the driveways basketball. We were playing wiffle ball. We were playing baseball in the backyard somewhere. You know, we would go to local elementary school and play tackle football without pads. You know, we were doing all those kinds of things to where skills and abilities were being honed hours upon hours upon hours outside of what back then was our school sports. Because we really only played with, the school organized sports until youth soccer came into the picture, AAU basketball, AAU track, and Pop Warner football. Maybe Pop Warner football was already there, but it is about spending the time on your own doing something out there. And there's nothing better than that self discipline that it takes to be able to prepare so that when you go to your team setting, You're not ahead.
You're prepared.
You're prepared.
Yeah.
You're prepared because most everybody, I should say, has the dream. Not everybody's willing to put the hours and the time into it. And so that's what happened with me. So I put the time into it. I put, you know, if I don't know when, a couple of decades ago, 3 decades ago, the 10,000 hour rule kind of a thing, you know. I was probably doing that. And I got the opportunity. When they saw me play my sophomore year from the Pacific and offered me a contract in Las Vegas, and my senior year when the LA Aztecs of the North American Soccer League Scouts saw me play in a California All-Star game. And Paul, I think this is something that our younger generation of players, a new generation of players should understand, was that as amazing as intercollegiate sports is these days, back in those days, the number of universities were relatively the same. You know, we had NCAA Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA. We were an NAIA program. And the coaches of all of those divisions would come together and have discussions over the phone about who were the best players. Who were the best players? Because, you know, we played against everybody. Division I against NAIA, Division II, et cetera. And I was fortunate enough to be called to a senior California bowl. Top seniors in California of Division I, Division II, Division III,
regardless.
Okay. Association, and play in a match between the North and the South, All-Stars, in La Mirada, California, at La Mirada High School, where my team, we were the South, by the way. For some reason, I was picked on the South because then the legendary coach of UCLA, Ziggy Schmidt, was my coach. And he was a young coach at the time, I think 3 years at UCLA. He was picked to coach that the South. I was on his team. During the 2 days of training, he saw something in me. He gave me the captain's armband, and we destroyed the North. We beat them 5-1, I think. And so I played really well. And so the scouts of the Aztecs were there, and they said, hey, we need you to come. They picked three of us, and they said, we need you to come and join the Aztec reserves next week.
Wow. Let's go. All right.
Let's play.
Let's play. All right. Yeah, we got to take a break here. Oh, my gosh. We'll continue this story about Jaime Ramirez and Pro, what he learned from that, and then taking that on to Fresno Pacific University. We'll take a small break. We're going to come back with Jaime Ramirez next on the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.
Now, welcome back to the Sunbird Sports Show with Paul Metters on 790 ESPN.
Director of soccer there. I'm going to change things up a little bit because I want to go all the way to 6 o'clock with Coach Ramirez. So we have some things. What's next for Fresno Pacific University? The men's and women's basketball, they're going to continue some CCAA opponents on deck. That's coming up next. The women's are going to travel all the way up to the Bay Area on Friday to play Cal State San Bernardino, and Saturday against host San Francisco State in the Gator Invitational. They're also going to host Stanislaus State before we go on air next week on Wednesday at 3 o'clock for their home opener. The men's going to be heading north on Friday to play UC Merced, then host Cal State Los Angeles on Monday at 4 o'clock for their home opener. Both men's and women's swim are going to be traveling down east to Los Angeles College from Friday through Sunday for their big midseason meet hosted by Laverne. They're going to be seeing a lot of SC opponents. As mentioned earlier, men's water polo are flying out to Geneva, Ohio for the 2025 WWPA Championship. Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, they're going to face McKendree in the quarterfinals to start the tournament and will play guaranteed matches on Saturday and Sunday as well. Finally, women's volleyball, they're going to be finishing up preparation for the 2025 PacWest Volleyball Championship in Honolulu, Hawaii right now. Tomorrow, they're going to play in the semifinals against host Chaminade at 9:30, and in a win move, if they win, they're going to move on to the championship match on Friday at 8 Pacific Standard Time against the winner of Point Loma and Hawaii Hilo. Make sure you guys stay tuned for FPU, Fresno Pacific University Sports. Really huge week coming up this week. All right, back to Jaime Ramirez, who's sitting across from me. Again, thank you for coming in on this Wednesday, a little bit earlier than we had anticipated. So playing in the pros, that experience there, what did you learn about maybe how tough it was playing at the next level, your skill set, some things that you learned then that you took on with your coaching career? So what was that time period of your life like?
One of the things that I learned when I was with the Aztecs was the level of commitment and intensity with which players trained and prepared for games on weekends. It's a job, right? And it's a job that can reward you with a higher salary, et cetera, starting position, you know. So every practice was as if though your life depended on it. Yeah. It was contested. The skill set were there by players. I mean, it is in a place where you get significantly better on your skills. You do improve them because of the way you train, because of the speed of play is exponentially faster than the college level. One of the things that I appreciate about my coach is that he ran us pretty good. So the fitness part was not an issue for me, is being able to play with a collective of players that all played really fast. And so it didn't take me long to adjust to that, and the competition was equally as fast and as strong. We played against a team in LA, I remember, it was called San Pedro Croat, all Croatians. And if you know anything about Croatians, they're big people. They're huge people. And they are nimble, and they move, and they handle the ball. And it was so much fun for me to play against them. You know, I kind of had my way. You know, I was a skillful player. I could hit a ball with both feet. In fact, that year I may have led the whole Greater Los Angeles League, Reserve League, semi-professional league in assists. I had 26 assists over, 32 games, I think it was. And I believe I had 20 goals that year. And we lost the championship match. I remember we lost it in penalties. But learning from them and the games, how contested they were, so much more at the next level beyond any college game that I had played before. Even, you know, we played University of San Francisco, because the University of San Francisco was at that time, I think average age about 26 years old, and they were all international. Norwegians, Africans, Brazilians, you know, Swedes. They were a very talented team. I would say that playing against them, who I remember we lost the first time 5-0 and 2-0, or it might have been 5-1. Maybe that team would have competed in the Greater Los Angeles League with us. But again, the pace, the level, the intensity, the commitment is what I was able to bring back to Fresno Pacific College once Ben Norton asked me to be an assistant coach for him, because he said, yeah, anything that you learn that is different than what we've been doing in the past or when you were here as a player, please share them with the players. And it was all like, no, it's got to be faster. It's got to be harder.
Is it, were you at a point, though, where what you learned, you know, competing, you said that, you know, it's the men's livelihood, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes a paycheck depended on it. Mm-hmm. The competition where, like, every mistake could cost you. It could mm-hmm. punish you, right? Mm-hmm. Every mistake you make on the field in a big-time mm-hmm. game mm-hmm. could cost you. Did that play any factor, like, that kind of mentality to the college level? Or the stakes way too high that you're like, man, I don't want to introduce that style? Does that make sense? Or that aggressiveness at that level? Or do you have to scale back a little bit?
Well, I think one of the things that I analyzed myself back in those days was at the pro level, you have there's a salary structure, you get paid for what you do, and then there's bonus incentives. You score a goal, you can assist, you go down on a tackle, you save a goal, you know, little bonuses here and there, and so you ask yourself, how does that translate to the amateur college level? Well, at the college level, there's really only one incentive. That's your scholarship. You know, you get what you get when you come in. Those players that are scholarship, not everybody's scholarship, by the way. So your scholarship, you oftentimes players come to the coach's office and say, hey, coach, I'm going to need more money for next year. Running low, whatever, you know, there's only so much I can take on loans. Okay, what do we have to do? Right? So those are incentives. Okay, well, you got to work harder. You got to spend more time, because time isn't a factor. You know, you manage your time with school, academics, work. You know, for those of us who worked on campus, okay, and your social life, which nobody denies you that, but then there's still hours in there to spend extra time in order to improve, to make the program better. And I believe that was the brilliance of my coach. That was the brilliance of Ben, that he saw an opportunity through my experience to bring that to the team. He managed the rest. He's the one that decided, you know, I'm bringing in this guy and I'm offering him this. I had no idea what people were getting. I mean, in fact, out of all the players that I was a player with, playing and an assistant coach, besides me, I don't know what everybody else received. I have no idea. Until I became a head coach and started managing the budget.
Yes.
I go, oh, that's how we did it.
Okay.
That's how you do it. It's like, you know, it's like, because I did see a list that he left. This player is getting this, this player is getting that. Oh, now it makes sense.
now I
have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
So you go with, you know, those incentives. You know, in a lot of cases, it's need. And in many cases, it's talent. And then you assess it year after year after year, evaluate it year after year after year. And so I think that mentality from the pro game came to say, hey, it's not just you get more just because you're a good guy, you know, and it's because you've earned it. You've improved, you've gotten better. And when I look at the generations of players throughout the years, we've had some amazing players. I think they've bought into the idea of, we want to train professionally. And we saw a generation post MLS, 1996, when MLS first came into the picture, and there were only 10 franchises, you know, 223 jobs in the country in soccer, right? Professional soccer, to currently, you know, and certainly back then, I was telling you about my son Orlando, right? In 2003, there were, I'm sorry, 2005, when he got drafted by the San Jose Earthquakes, there were 12 franchises.
Hmm.
So an additional.
Where are we at now? Do you know?
We're 29.
29.
A lot more jobs. And so, and we have been able to put players into MLS, you know, throughout, and other professional leagues, right? Back in those days was the A-League, et cetera. You know, Pablo Campos was the A-League player of the year with the San Antonio Scorpions, highest paid player in the league after playing for San Jose and winning MLS Cup with Real Salt Lake. And so those guys come from this mentality, right? We recruited them with talent already, but we put them into this culture of professional sports to understand that, hey, you're gonna get what you put into it, right? And fortunately for us, they listened. they listened to what we had to say.
Well, yeah, and your experience, your love for Fresno Pacific University, that played a huge role in it, right? And how much the kids, you know, I say kids, right? But the young men and young women as well that you coach at Fresno Pacific University. Something that's very important to you, I know, Jaime, is just developing the whole person,
mm-hmm.
right? Soccer is a great aspect of life, but you see as, your the mentorship. You want your players to graduate from Fresno Pacific with more than a degree, more than a soccer career, but just a well-rounded person. That was always important to you, right?
Yes. It you know, how my coaches, and I can say that starting from high school, my high school coach, John Steinborn, he passed away last year, rest in peace, was the first sports influence in my life who demonstrated his faith. He's openly Christian. And his language, his behavior, his demeanor, you know, he was demanding, because I believe he had played football at Fresno State back in those days, in the 60s, probably early 60s. But he was a godly man. And then my coach at Fresno Pacific, Ben Norton, you know, was a godly man. He often would bring the Bible to practice, read us in some Old Testament scripture that had a reference to
David and Goliath,
exactly,
maybe,
David and Goliath, or you know, spare the rod, you spoil the child, kind of a thing, you know. So then he would make us run. but it's all good.
Yeah.
And so it was about building character in the individual through a faith experience. And so I was able to take that from them, the example and the modeling, and other professors and mentors that I had at the university that were also involved in the beginning of sports. Someone like Gary Nachtigall, who's my freshman mentor and life mentor. you know, a shout out to him because he was instrumental in that as well. So taking that onto the coaching experience that I've had all these decades, and having our young players understand that your character, your person, the faith that you have in God has a lot to do with how you're going to prepare. How are you going to take instruction? How are you going to take correction? You know, and how are you going to take a good chewing every once in a while, mm-hmm. right? Because we do that. But more importantly, I think maybe equally as important, that they are able to see the love that we have for them, that we care for them. We care for them as people. I've been tough on some kids throughout the years, as all coaches, you know, we all are. And I've had emails and or phone calls
good later in life.
10, 12 years later, say, "Profe, thank you. I get it now. I'm a coach. I have a family, you know, I'm going to church, and I get why you said and you did some of the things that you did. You know, at that time I didn't understand it, but it all makes sense now." And it just brings me to tears to listen to them, that, you know, they do listen. They do listen. It's just so cool to hear those testimonies. You know, and the other thing, Paul, that is important for people to hear, and I might have mentioned it the last time, is it's not always about the great players.
Yeah.
It's about the whole team. It's about the whole team. I think it was last fall, I got an email message from a kid that came to us from a friend of mine that I took a coaching license, national coaching license course with, from Columbia, Rafael Jr. came to play for me. He says, "I want to play for you because my dad is your friend. He's from Illinois. They're out of Columbia." Came, he was a spot here and there, you know, came off the bench, played here and there. Fantastic personality, great kid. I would say probably played a total of 55 minutes in 2 years. He was a community college transfer from Illinois, maybe a total. Left with his degree, parents came, graduated. Just the last year, and he graduated before COVID. He came to us for COVID, and he's into MMA now. He's got discipline, man.
Yeah.
But he sent me an email, just thanking me for accepting him, for giving him the opportunity, for learning from us, learning from all the good players that we had on the team, and for taking the approach of faith being the most important in our lives, that helped change his character and have the discipline that he has now to be an MMA boxer, I guess.
Yeah, fighter.
And I share that with the team. I share that with the team in a pregame. Talking, I said, this is what we do, and this is for all of us, because we don't all get called, you know, to play 90 minutes or 60 minutes or 30 minutes, but we all get called to participate. We all get called to help, and our lives are forever changed.
Well, Coach Ramirez, we got like 2 more minutes, and we're going to have to do a part 3, man. Let's put it on the calendar for 2026, yeah. Right? So you just have so many great stories, and you know, I know people, you mentioned your mentors, and you've mentored a lot of young men and women over the years. I have a little bit of a fun question for you I want to end this with.
Okay.
Right, so obviously your Mexican heritage is very important to you. You also have some Mennonite, right, family as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The M&Ms.
All right, the M&Ms. All right, your best Mexican food meal you could ever have in your life, your best Mennonite food you could ever have in your life. Wrap it up with that. What do you like best about each?
Well, Mexican food is menudo. I like menudo. I'm sorry. the stews come to mind. Pozole.
Menudo
was my grandfather. Pork.
Yeah. Okay.
Pork. I'm a I'm pork. So pozole is an important winter cool weather meal for me.
Yeah.
Not all year, but I will go to this.
100%.
I go to this particular place to get it.
I teach in Traver. I get that every Christmas.
Yeah. And Mennonite is two things.
Okay.
Maybe even three. But the fritters are amazing. Fritters are amazing. Not any particular dish. I'm not a fan of German sausage and those kinds of things. I'm not a fan. But I am a huge fan of pepernuts. Mm. The Christmas pepernuts, I can eat them all day. My wife makes them for Christmas. My daughter makes them. My granddaughter makes them. My children make them. We do tamales and pepernuts all at the same time for Christmas.
The M&Ms.
Yeah, the M&Ms.
The M&Ms. Oh, that's awesome. So you got the sweet tooth from the Mennonite tradition. You like the pozole for your Mexican heritage.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Good combo. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in, Jaime. You're one of the best, and I love listening to your stories. And man, I always take away something personally as well whenever we have a conversation. So
thanks for having me, Paul. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. It means a lot.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Blessings.
We're gonna have to do part three next year, 2026.
For Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas in the future to you as well. All right. So that is a wrap for this show. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. We'll have another great show in 2 weeks. We're going to take next week off because it's the day before Thanksgiving. So have a great couple weeks, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.